In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Rob and I are going to be talking about the ABCDE method for setting better priorities. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 191. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Mike.
And I'm Rob.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. What's the word this week, Rob?
You know, we have another success story. Matthew Paulson wrote in and he said, I started listening to Startups for the Rest of Us shortly after it started in 2010. Using the advice and strategies mentioned on your show, I've been able to build three profitable software businesses, including an investment research software business called Analyst Ratings Network, a press release distribution service, and a piece of fundraising software for animal shelters and humane societies. I'm on track to have my first seven-figure year and have just finished writing a book about the lessons I've learned from building these businesses. The book is called 40 Rules for Internet Business Success. It'll be out on July 21st. You can learn more about it at 40rulesbook.com. Thank you for your continued inspiration to the bootstrapped startup community.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, I love to hear stories of people who are, even in a small way, are impacted by what we're doing. It helps them build their business. And then they go on to build really cool stuff and then go on to teach others as well.
Yeah, totally. So my wife and I are starting to really follow through on cutting the cord to cable. And this past week, we called up Verizon and just dumped our cable itself. We kept our internet and phone, but just cutting the cable alone cut more than $100 a month.
That's so awesome.
We still have Netflix and Hulu Plus and Amazon Prime.
Yep.
But I think it was the second night after we had canceled cable. And we're sitting there, it's just kind of looking at each other. It's like, well, we could go watch a movie, but I'm tired. Let's just go to bed.
Yeah, totally. You don't just flip stuff on and watch like HGTV or other kind of mindless shows.
Yeah, we just went to bed and got more sleep instead.
Yeah. You know, we first cut the cord like 7 or 8 years ago, and it was a big leap then because there was no Hulu Plus, no Amazon Prime. It really was just Netflix, but we still had DVDs, you know, so we watched a lot of movies. It was a sacrifice at first, but especially these days, I think it's something that unless you need live sports, pretty much everything else, including like the Super Bowl, you know, like Academy Awards ceremony and that kind of stuff, tends to be streamed online now. And so you really don't miss out on too much. And I found the same thing as you. I don't spend very much time watching TV. I watch a lot of shows, like probably 4 or 5 shows I follow. But aside from that, I don't sit down and watch TV. So I really only watch like, let's say 4 or 5 hours a week total, and I never watch commercials. So it's actually not that much time that I spent in front of the TV. Speaking of that, I had a recommendation for a show. Have you watched Silicon Valley? It's on HBO.
I have not.
Yes. And you obviously either got to have HBO Go or, you know, some other way to obtain it. The first episode was in full on YouTube. It's interesting. You know, it's fun to kind of see people poking fun into the space. And Mike Judge, who did Office Space, is the creator. And I think he wrote the first few episodes. So it's worth checking out. It's pretty vulgar. And if you can tolerate that kind of stuff, then it's a good show.
So you said you don't watch commercials. How do you deal with that when you're watching Hulu
that,
stuff?
To be honest, that's the one place where I watch it and it's driving me nuts now. And I think I'm going to cancel my Hulu Plus subscription. And if I want to watch something that's on Hulu Plus, I'm going to buy it. I'd prefer to pay $2 for an episode rather than watch what is now like almost as many commercials as that are on like a network, right? When it started off, it was like 2 or 3 commercials for a 22-minute show. And now it's like 2 or 3 commercials per break. And then you have 3 or 4 breaks. It's pretty ridiculous. I've been reading a lot of books lately. I'm a big Audible fan. And with that, the 13 hours of travel to and from Scotland and being in the airports and stuff, I just had a lot of audio time the past month or so. I wanted to run through a few of them and kind of give recommendations and my thoughts on them. They are related to startups and entrepreneurship in general. The first is called Predictable Revenue. And it's written by the guy or one of the guys who built the sales pipeline or the sales force at salesforce.com. And it's an interesting book. I found that I got a little bit out of the first couple chapters, but overall, it's about scaling a sales organization. So if you are not going to be scaling a sales organization, I would not recommend this book. He does have something he hints at. He's like cold calling 2.0, and he talks about it, and you're all intrigued, and he really builds it up. And then when he gets to it, it's like, it's cold emailing. That's what it is. It's getting a list of people and cold emailing them with a certain technique. And I'm like, oh, that was a big letdown. I imagine that they may be partially responsible for all the cold emails I get pitching me different products. Now, it's not spam, technically, right? It's not stuff that's getting spam, but it's people sending it through like Yesware and Tout app and that kind of stuff. So overall, probably for our audience, not really worth reading. two that I think would be interesting to our audience. One is called Hatching Twitter. I think I mentioned it in a previous podcast. Very, very good story of the beginnings of Twitter and just all the chaos, the soap opera that went along with that. The other one that I just listened to is called Things a Little Bird Told Me. And this is Biz Stone. He's one of the co-founders of Twitter. It's kind of his story. It's his life story. And so his early stories aren't as interesting as, you know, once he starts doing tech stuff. But he does a good job of kind of taking lessons away from different parts of his life and linking them into his startup success. And I have a lot of respect for Biz. He just seems to be a hardworking, legitimate guy. He didn't stab a bunch of people in the back. I guess I have respect for him. So Things a Little Bird Told Me is good, but I definitely would recommend you add it to your Audible list. The last one I'll talk about is another one that I would recommend. And when it started off, it's called Contagious. When it started off, I was thinking, you know, this is just like every other book about virality. And it's going to focus solely on B2C stuff. And it's all about viral videos. And it's about the blend tech. You know, will it blend videos? And it's about that kind of stuff. And to be honest, it did have a lot of B2C leanings. But what I found is that he lays out 5 discrete steps that make something contagious. But what I liked about it is that just listening to it, I almost turned it off. But once I started taking each of the points he talked about, when I started specifically applying it to Drip, it really started making a difference. And I actually was able to take a bunch of notes from it, like actual action steps that I'm going to either think about with Drip or that I'm going to implement on Drip. And it's ways to make it something that's easier for people to talk about and makes it more interesting for people who are using it. So I think if you have a product and you can apply this to it, even if you're not in a B2C niche, I think Contagious is good for you. I think if you don't have a product and you're still kind of looking to launch or you're pre-launch or whatever, I don't think it's going to necessarily give you a lot of value.
I think that's one of the big problems I have with a lot of, I'll say business type books, is it's very difficult to find ones where you can get actionable stuff that comes out of
them. I know. When I read business books, I really try to stick to specific niches that actually relate to us, because most books are like for the Fortune 500 VP of sales, and you start reading it and you're like, this has nothing to do with what I'm doing.
Yeah, it's just not relevant in any way, shape, or form.
Yep, exactly.
Well, I think the only other thing I have is my wife finally opened up her own fitness studio in town. So I've been helping her through all of the quote-unquote essential but unimportant aspects of setting up her business.
What are those?
So, well, they're the things like filing the paperwork and making sure that you get a checking account and things like that. You know, it's like the stuff that you need to do but doesn't actually do anything for your business.
So how come she gave that to you?
It's not that she gave it to me. It's just she was asking for my advice on how to do different things and how to structure different stuff. And since I've done some of the stuff before, it makes it easier for her. I'm easy to access,
sure.
I guess.
That's cool.
So just because I've gone through it a bunch of different times for several different businesses. So, you know, I went down to the bank with her to help her out and just to help her ask like the right questions. And then in terms of the business paperwork, going to the county clerk, she actually did all that stuff. I didn't. But then in terms of getting her lease straightened out, you know, I gave her some advice on that. And I think the beneficial thing is that now that I'm home all the time, it's actually kind of allowed her to get herself in a position where she can open up a studio. Because before, when I was on the road all the time, it's hard for her to have a studio because my schedule's in flux, which means that she can't have a set schedule for her fitness studio. So having both of us at home is actually good. It's going to be quite a bit more beneficial than I had probably thought it was in the past.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that's kind of a side effect. I wouldn't have thought of that, but it totally makes sense. Nice. Yep. I mean, it's extra income that you wouldn't have had. It's pretty cool. Congratulations.
I guess we'll piggyback a little bit on the book recommendations that you had, but this episode's kind of a summary of a method that I had picked up from chapter 6 of a book called Eat That Frog, 21 Ways to Stop Procrastinating, Improve Organization Skills, and Get More Done in Less Time. The book is by Brian Tracy, and this episode is just going to be one chapter of the book. There's another 20 interesting ideas that are in there, which if you're struggling with time management or procrastination or anything like that, you know, there's a lot of different things in there that could certainly help you out. But I primarily picked it up because I've been looking at a lot of different things on time management and getting more things done faster. And this was definitely a way to do that. So the specific technique that we're going to talk about today is I've actually used a variation of it for quite some time, but it was really interesting to see a much more formalized structure of this mechanism. So I've kind of restructured a little bit of how I'm handling it. But the basics of it is that what Brian Tracy lays out is that the step one is to write out your to-do list. So you lay down every single thing that it is that you have to, you know, anything where you can list them out. I actually use Trello for my variation of this strategy. And then once you've done that, step two do is to assign each item to a specific category. So the categories are labeled A, B, C, D, and E, and we'll go through each of them. The first one is A, and A stands for very important. It's something that you absolutely must do, and if you don't do it, there are serious negative consequences if you don't do it. So examples of that would be if you don't pay your bills full and it's due in 2 or 3 days. It's like that's something that you really have to do, and if you don't do it, like a mortgage payment, for example, then something like that, although it's not business related, it is, I'll say, life related. And because of that, it falls into your to-do list. So you have to pay the mortgage, and it's got to get done, and it's got to get done very, very quickly. And if you don't do it, then you're going to get smacked with late fees. And then on top of that, it could end up on your credit report if you don't do it for long enough.
Right. And I think another example with this, probably dealing with business, is like paying your taxes or getting deliverable to a client or getting someone who's trying to use your app to the next step of onboarding if you're doing kind of intensive, high-touch sales type stuff. I realize that one could be bumped to B where it's just important, but I would say if you're going to be losing revenue or having to pay a penalty or something, then that would stand in A. Like A is revenue-driving stuff, but I would say that probably in A, marketing tasks would not go there, right? Not unless they're super time critical, like it's a Black Friday promotion and it has to go on that day, and it's Wednesday of that week, then your Black Friday email drafting would go into very important. But if it's not time sensitive, if it's just like drafting copy for a new ad or trying to run a new campaign or exploring stuff, I would say that would go in lower priority stuff.
That's right. So as you kind of alluded to, B stands for important. It's something that you should do. It's not as important as your A tasks, but you know, there's relatively minor consequences for not completing it today. You know, as you said, some of the marketing tasks, if you don't finish rewriting your web page today, then you can always come back to it tomorrow, and it's not that big a deal. Sure, you know, it's going to get pushed out, and there are things that it would be nice to have it done today, but it's not so critical. It's not time sensitive in most cases. But as you said, if there are times where, you know, you've got a deadline of some kind, let's say that there's marketing materials that you've got to get out for a press release because it's coinciding with a launch event, sure, those things would fall into an A task. But otherwise, if you don't have a lot of things that are kind of coming together all at once, they will probably fall into the B category.
Yeah, I think this is where the majority of my tasks fall as a kind of day-to-day marketing startups and throwing conferences and doing the podcast and all that stuff. I think the stuff moves into the A point where A, it's going to cost me money. B, it is going to make me money and I'm going to lose that if I don't do it. Or C, it's a deadline. Like you and I are going to be recording the podcast at 2 o'clock and it's 1 o'clock and I need to outline it, right? So then it's very important because otherwise I basically have like a hard deadline and that I really can't push off. So I think B is kind of where the bulk of my stuff that I ever do is where I wind up prioritizing it. And I, to be honest, I don't use A, B, C, D, E, but I really like the idea of it. Right now, based on your previous mention, I just have two Trello boards. One is my to-do A, and then I have to-do B. And A is not critical important stuff. It's kind of everything I'm working on. And then B is stuff that I want to do long term or that it is less important and I rarely get to my B. But I like the idea, you know, once we get down to D and E and people hear about those, I think I'm going to be adding those to my Trello boards as well.
One of the things that you kind of mentioned was that, you know, a lot of the stuff that you work on kind of falls into the B category. What I found is that things kind of move from one category into the next based on how close you are to the deadline. So for example, something might start out as a B task and then it moves into an A task as the deadline gets closer because you push it off because you've got other things that are kind of more important, but then that deadline comes up and you move it from B to A because you've got to work on it now because you are not going to have time later on.
And I think this is why early stage startups are so hard because there isn't so much that has such a strict deadline. And there isn't so much that's going to make you money or cost you money when you're pre-launch and you're just trying to get to launch, right? So it's hard to prioritize because everything kind of falls into B. And then you need to go with your gut of what's going to have the most impact either to your motivation or to getting you closer to launch. And that's where I do think it's tricky. And there's a lot of judgment calls into what task should you step to next.
Yeah, and I think a lot of those things, you know, for example, things like the billing code, that's something that typically you would say, oh, well, I've got to get this done. It's pretty important. But at the same time, until you start getting customers, the billing code just doesn't matter. So the reality is you could almost push that into the C category, which stands for things that are nice to do, but are not as important as A or B. And there's no negative consequences for not completing it. So if I don't do the billing code today and I don't have any customers, it really doesn't matter. If I don't do the billing code for 3 months and I have 5 or 10 customers, the reality is that it probably still doesn't matter that much. It's only when going through the billing process is so cumbersome that it's actually costing you a lot of time and effort to do it, that's when it should probably progress into a B or an A task, because you want to be able to scale, but that becomes a limiting factor in your business. So if it's a time crunch of some kind, or if it's becoming a limitation on your business and how quickly you can move and how many things you can get done, that's kind of, in my mind, when it can move from C to B to A. And then there's things where you just completely miss the deadline and it completely goes from A to, okay, well, why am I going to even bother doing this?
Yeah, we were at somewhere between 12 and 15 essentially paying customers with Drip before I had billing code rolled. And I was just doing manual billing. I had a bunch of calendar reminders that would pop up every 30 days and I would bill a person for the next month. And it wasn't even that time consuming. I did it myself. I didn't delegate it to anyone. And that was my MVP for my billing engine, was me sitting there clicking a button and entering a dollar amount. Billing code definitely fell into C at that point. What I also think is interesting is how this applies to your email inbox as well. And I know emails are a form of to-dos, but you know, I've been traveling a lot over the past couple of years, and when I leave for 2, 3, 4 weeks and I don't answer anything except for an A email during that time, I find that a lot of the C emails disappear by the time I get back. And what I mean by that, they're still in my inbox. They're irrelevant and I never needed to respond. Either the person figures stuff out or it just wasn't really that important. Whereas if I'm sitting here in my office and I'm checking email every couple hours, I feel the need to respond to those. But when you're on vacation, it's like an excuse to, maybe not even on vacation, just traveling, right? It's kind of an excuse to not have to answer those. And I actually think that's better for your time management overall. I think it forces you into the time constraint of, you know, what if I could only work 1 hour a day, which was something I did all of October last year. And you know what? It wasn't actually that bad. We launched to 600 people, you know, because Drip wasn't live yet. We launched to 600 people in October and everything was in place to handle that. And there were no major fallouts, not only with that launch, but with all the other businesses and all the other things that I'm working on. It all turned out okay. So there, we really do have this kind of false sense, I think, of needing to work 8 hours a day or more on things. Having more time doesn't make you necessarily more efficient. And if you choose which things to put in your A's and B's and you can ignore the others, I really think that you can get more power out of the hours a day that you do work.
People use going on vacation as an excuse to not reply to emails. I was listening to the Tim Ferriss podcast. It's called The Tim Ferriss Show. He had a guest on, I think it was the episode where he had Neil Strauss on, who's the author of The Game. And he was asking Neil what his thoughts were on email and how he gets things done. And one of the things that came out of it was that he does not even actually have internet access. So he can't check his email during most of the day. He has this software installed that it's aimed at keeping your kids safe and making sure that they can only access the internet while you're around. Well, he has it in place, but his wife has the password and it only opens up during 2 hours of the day. So he literally cannot check his email or do anything online unless his wife is there to put in the password for him during these 2 hours of the day. So he's kind of taken it to an extreme level.
I heard that too. And what I loved about it was his quote. He said, "It's amazing how quickly you can get through email when you know you only have 60 minutes to do it." And that's it. You force that. You put an artificial constraint on it, and you will crank through things. Things that you would take 3 hours to do, you can get done in 60 minutes if you just hustle through it.
So we've talked about A, B, and C tasks so far. Let's talk about the D tasks. The D in this system stands for delegate. And these are the tasks that you can assign to somebody else who can do that job instead of you. And, you know, we're kind of big proponents on the show about doing a lot of outsourcing and taking things off your plate, recording screencasts and setting up, you know, standard operating documents and procedures and handing those things off to other people. But really, if you're taking a look at your tasks, there's a lot of things that if you're looking through your tasks before you even get started, you're going to find that there's a ton of stuff on there that you just cannot possibly finish all of it in any given day. And in fact, most of it's going to take you a very long time. And I think one of the big fallacies or myths that I kind of got caught by very early on was that, oh, if once I scale to a certain amount of revenue and have enough people working for me, I'll have enough time to get all of this stuff done. I'll never be in a situation where my to-do list will outstrip my ability to actually get stuff done, because I can hand these things off to people, or I can get all the stuff that's not important off my plate. But the reality is that you can't. I mean, there's only so much that you can do no matter what. In order to get a lot of these things done, you are going to have to delegate it. You're going to have to outsource it to some people. And whether that's accounting stuff or whether it's programming or marketing or, you can bring other people in to do some of that stuff for you. But the key is to be able to concretely identify what it is that you can outsource and what you can't.
What I like about the system is he's basically having you decide if it's a D right when you come up with a task. And so you're kind of doing it in bulk. What I do is I just have this A and the B list. I put everything in A that I'm working on. And when I get to a task, I ask myself, can I delegate it? Can I eliminate this task? That means that I'm processing each one individually, and I don't think it's as efficient as what he has.
You know, what I found is that I tend to forget that step. So like if I'm going through my to-do list, I'll get to something and I just immediately think, okay, I've got to get this done. And it doesn't necessarily occur to me that, oh, I insert this if statement and say, hey, can I delegate this? And if not, you know, then do it. But otherwise, if I can, then figure out how to delegate. I tend to get into the mode of getting things done and going through that list. And I don't stop to think at the beginning of each one to, you know, see if I can delegate it.
Right. Yeah, I think I've gotten in a pretty good habit of every task that I get, every email I get, and everything in my to-do list, that the first question I ask is, can I delegate it? And it's taken a while to get into that habit. There were two points this week. One was, you know, I emailed you about it, actually. The audio player inside the Micropreneur Academy started having problems. And our audio files were fine, but if you played it in the browser, it was all chunky. And I went around, tried to figure out what it was. Turns out there's a new version of it that works in new browsers. We had to update 89 pages because of the way it's a WordPress thing and it's in individual posts. So my first thought was, boy, I'm sure not going to go through and update 89 pages, even though it was a little bit of a technical thing, right? You had to update some JavaScript and make a couple changes. But instead of going through and doing it, which probably would have taken me, who knows, maybe 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes. It wasn't the end of the world. Instead of doing that, I recorded a screencast really quick and poof, it was just done like magic, right? I mean, I got an email back 6 hours later or whatever, and Andy had taken care of it. And there was another point where someone emailed and they wanted an invoice for a MicroConf Europe ticket they'd purchased. And again, how long does that take? You know, it takes 5 minutes maybe to get a Word format up and we have a template already and you entered some info, but instead shot off an email and just said, reply directly to that guy. I don't need to see this again, you know? And both of those are small examples of delegation. They're not things that are going to save me hours a week, but by combining a bunch of those together and considering I get 10 things a week like that that come up, it actually does save me hours a week.
Yeah, the bottom line there is that all of those different things that you delegate, they add up. I mean, even if you're only saving 5 or 10 minutes for 5 or 6 different tasks, I mean, if you just save yourself half an hour out of the day, you know, that's a significant chunk of the day that you just freed up to do other things. So let's move on to E. E stands for eliminate. If at any time, if it's ever possible to just eliminate something because it's not important, go ahead and do it. If it's something that you deem to be qualifies for elimination, then chances are that it's just not good enough for you to do. I mean, it's not even worth your time to go through the effort of delegating it to somebody just to get it done.
I feel like in my system, I do this before I add stuff to the to-do list at all. I have a pretty itchy trigger finger, so when new tasks come up, I'll just fire them off to my Trello board via email. But before I do that, I have a pretty heavy filter of like, do I actually need to do this? So I rarely go through my to-do list and eliminate things. I feel like I eliminate them in advance, right? And I don't actually put them on the to-do list.
I think one of the more interesting examples of where you could use this E step is if you're brainstorming with people on your team and you just, you know, when you're brainstorming stuff, you don't want to throw anything away. You just want to throw ideas out there, write them down and get them out and then discuss them after the fact. So I think that that's a very key part of the process of where you can brainstorm, just throw stuff on paper. And instead of eliminating it before you add it to the to-do list, you do it afterwards and kind of that batching process. Another place where that might come up is customer suggestions that come in that are just so off the wall. Those are places where I could see it being used as well.
Yeah, I do have a list in Trello, which is obviously a collection of a little Trello cards, and it's just called Future. And it's stuff that I think we want to do, but it's some bigger picture projects that haven't been fleshed out into individual steps. And I definitely want to track it. It's not stuff that should be eliminated. It can't be delegated yet. It'll probably be delegated to maybe multiple people, or it's a pretty in-depth spec that's needed to give to a developer. And it's stuff that's not critical to get done now, but it's kind of like a future marketing idea that needs some coding or needs, you know, a bunch of an ebook written or something like that. So I do have a future board, and I think that would probably fit into my, I guess that's like my C, but realistically, I think that might be a combination of C and D for me.
So to just to quickly recap on the A, B, C, D, E method, A stands for very important. It's things that you have to do. B stands for important. It's something that you should do. C is something that is nice to do. D stands for delegate. And E stands for eliminate. So if you're interested in hearing more about this particular book, again, this is just chapter 6 of Eat That Frog. There's 20 other time management and organization management skills that you can learn through the book. It's only $9 on Amazon. It's a very, very short book, but if you want to speed through it even faster, what you can do is you can skip to the end of each chapter. And at the very end of each chapter, there's probably two or three paragraphs where it just summarizes the content of the chapter itself. And you can get a very quick overview of what some of the different things are that they're talking about in depth. And if there's anything that you don't understand, you can just flip back through the chapter and read it a little bit more. But the book itself, I think, is only about 120 pages or so. It's pretty short.
If you've listened to this episode and you have a question for us, you can email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. We also have a voicemail number. It's 888-801-9690. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups or by RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where we also include a full transcript of each episode. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, and it's used under Creative Commons. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.